show. This is episode 51 of the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. We officially have social media pages because I promised myself I wouldn't bother with it until we got to 50 episodes, and we did that last week. And for the second week in a row, we are joined by people that we just trapped traveling through the state of Montana as we endeavor to have conversations with people around the state. Sometimes some interesting folks just kind of make the mistake of breaking the state line and traveling through. My name's Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey. We are joined by Will Summers and Maddie Clark from Horse Soldier Bourbon Whiskey. This is fantastic
whiskey
news.
I love whiskey.
This is
We're
fantastic
talking whiskey.
News. Well, and Horse Soldier specifically. Sirs, welcome.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You for
Good to be
us.
Here.
Let's start with the obvious thing. I know this because I have a drinking problem. But I've been a fan of the bourbon for a long time. I will let you guys tell the story behind it because it's really kind of special.
Okay. Will Summers here. I guess we earned the nickname Horse Soldier in Afghanistan. My ODA, and that's a 12-man team of Green Berets, we led the invasion into Afghanistan right after the 9/11 attacks. When we got there, we ended up mounting Afghan war horses, and we fought from the mountain ranges through liberating the city of Mazar-e Sharif from horseback, fighting Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We earned the nickname among our peers, all the horse soldiers. It was more kind of a, you know, ribbing than anything like, oh, look, here comes the horse soldiers, you know. But it stuck, got a national monument. Everybody started retiring, and through the leadership of Scott Neal, our president, and John Coco, our CEO, we decided to kind of get the band back together and do something. Bourbon was what it was, the American spirit. And so we hit it unconventional warfare, Green Beret style, and have been the fastest growing, highest awarded bourbon distillery in the United States for over 3 years now.
We're going to get into the whiskey for a second, but first let me ask the nerd question. Are you Chris Hemsworth?
No, that would be Mark Nooch,
okay.
Our commander.
Because if people don't know that movie with Thor, that's you guys.
That's us, yeah.
Now, when you watch that movie, are you like, did you guys get anything right? Because I'm not ex-military, but a couple of my closest friends are, and I can't watch movies with them.
Right.
Because they ruin everything. They're like, that is not how that works. That guy's wearing that backwards. That's not even loaded. I'm like, man,
that's
I don't
all
know.
True.
Wrong uniform.
That's all true, yeah.
I was just watching stuff blow up and having a good time. Why are you doing this to me?
Right.
Can you watch that film? Is it something you're okay with? Are you proud of it?
Yeah, you got like, you got a movie made after yourself, you know?
Right.
It wasn't Happy Gilmore, so what... I don't have anything to complain about. We didn't have anything to do with the movie. So no advisory
That's
role,
interesting.
No information. That kind of separates us from royalties and earnings.
Oh.
The American way.
That's a dirty trick.
But, you know, it was a good movie. It was fun to watch.
Okay.
It wasn't super accurate. For us, the big details were the lack of real true combat skills, you know, used in the movie. So that then when we saw our peers were like, dude, why would you ever do that? Or why would, and we just said, look, man, we had nothing to do with that.
Right. Now, I saw a documentary on Netflix that also heavily mentioned you guys and starting that. Now, is that a little bit more irritating because it's a documentary? It's supposed to be all factually correct. And anybody I've ever seen tied to a documentary is always like, they got this wrong as well. So, and that's supposed to be more factual.
Yeah. Legion of Brothers, I think, is what you're talking mm-hmm. about. So I was let down by it because I think that they missed the good story, and they promoted the bad story. Not to, you know, complain about it, but when we were filming that, it was super America, super patriotic,
right.
Pro-military, just awesome, awesome, awesome. People giving their lives for the country, you know? And then when it came out, it was like, oh, I have PTSD, and this guy weirded out and, you know, read a poem up on a mountainside. I was just like, that's not who we are. That's not how that went down.
Mm.
So they took the gloomy stuff and missed over all the, you know, just the great Americana stuff that was in there.
This episode of the podcast brought to you by Reminisce Angus Beef. I encourage you to go to remangusbeef.com and read their story. You can find out all about Brian Massard and the ranch down in Dillon, Montana, and how they got started breeding cows
for taste. It sounds simple, but it's not something that a lot of people do, and it results in the best tasting beef that you can find anywhere, not just here in Montana, but anywhere in the country. He supplies 4-star restaurants around the nation with the best steaks, burgers, and beef treats that you can find.
Bread for flavor. You can see it when you get the cuts, whether it's a steak or stew meat or the specialty meats. It all tastes different. It all tastes better. And it's been chosen by some of the finest chefs in the country at Vail Resorts, places like the Yellowstone Club, and they have chosen it by taste. Get it delivered right to your door. That's the best part. Just pick out the cuts you want. You can get beef boxes. You can get an entire beef if you'd like. Just go to remangusbeef.com.
I hate to hear that, because that's the editing that they do on reality TV. They'll film 27 hours of content and they'll boil it down to 3 minutes of the argument that was had in the kitchen, right, you know, and that's what ends up being the entire show.
Yeah.
And worse still, they create caricatures as opposed to characters.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, that's the angry guy. That's the quiet yes. guy. That's the PTSD guy. You know, that.
Yes.
It bums me out when I hear that because I have not lived a life of consequence, and you have. And I feel like that's deserving of at least telling the story as it should be told.
Yeah. It's no big deal.
Well, you're very humble. I'll say it's a big deal. Netflix, get your shit together.
and when you say you got the band back together, so how many, what percentage, how many guys are involved with that got together when, you know what, we want to do something beyond this, and we created the whiskey?
We've got 5 of the original team members and then a couple of the CIA ground branch operatives that were there float in and out when they're not doing great things across the world. Mm-hmm. And help us out. Yeah, so 5, 6, 7 of us at any given time.
And did you entertain anything else other than whiskey? Was there a way to, or was that easy?
Bourbon was easy. There were some other ideas before we got introduced to this thing that were not good ideas. So
Frisbees. No.
Yeah, Frisbees. That's great. Camouflage Frisbees. We'll make them the color of a green beret.
We're right. Not doing electric cars. We're not doing that.
NFTs. We should do non-fungible tokens. No.
There you go. I think that bourbon ended up being the right area to get into.
Now, I just recently, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I did the whole bourbon tour in Kentucky, yeah, where everybody you talk to reminds you there's limestone in the soil, and that's what filters the water, which creates a special taste. I can still recite it from memory. It's like a Clockwork Orange. You know, you get in there. but the, you know, the whole not all whiskey's bourbon, but all bourbon's whiskey.
That's right.
And the fact that it is the one recognized by Congress, it's got to be this. It's got to be that.
Yeah, you're smart, man.
Trust me. Like I said, I went through the tour, and like everybody will, they're like, you're not from here. You need to know this, and this. Well, that's what the last guy said. How long of a process was it for you to be like, because I am a huge fan of the bourbon and I'm a bourbon dork. When we get done here, I'll show you a picture of the wall in my bar and all of the barrel stave shelves that I have built into the wall and all
that
stuff. You guys got it right. And
for sure.
Like any bourbon guy, I had my, I'm like, okay, it's a gimmicky thing. I get it. They're veterans, but is it any good? And it's really good. How long did that take to get that dialed in the way everybody was going to be happy with it?
I don't think there was a lot of dialing in. There was a lot of research. Some of the guys went all over Europe to just, you know, the oldest, most ancient distilleries, talked with these families who had been distilling for generations and generations.
You guys were on Isla, weren't you?
Yeah, they were all across Ireland, Scotland, England, everywhere. I wasn't part of that. And so this is what we do as Green Berets. This, we gather intelligence, you know, and then you sift through all that intelligence. Then we came, they did the whole bourbon trail thing and learned that, but really researched it, looked at it, you know, in my opinion, as an enemy situation. So here's a hostile enemy situation. How do we exploit their weaknesses? How do we, you know, promote our strengths against them? And so we came up with a positive or popular mash bill that was a little extreme to just, you know, whatever. That was our little niche. We did a little more and a little more. And, you know, it ended up coming out just perfect.
No, it's and aggressive is the way I described it.
Yeah.
First time I had it, I'm like, that's a really, and that's in my wheelhouse. Like, that's a really aggressive bourbon. I dig it for that reason. So you can taste that.
Yeah, tons of flavor. But it's, I mean, it's the wheat is soft and smooth. I think it's delicious. I think it's absolutely
delicious. Well,
you're not
wrong.
Well, it makes a lot of sense as any business. If a group of guys like you, a group of military guys, especially Green Berets, if you're going to do something, you're probably going to do it right. You got that ingrained kind of into you, and I'm sure you take it to about everything you do. And I think there's other companies that you can probably reflect the same way that when you get a group of guys together who know nothing but attacking something, nothing right. but being real analytical about it and making sure it's a smart way to do it, that had to translate into it. Now, once you reach the consumer, you're kind of at the whim of what other people are going to read into that. And we talked about the Netflix thing. Was it a concern at all that maybe in the times we live in, half the population's going to go, oh, you know, gosh, you know, I don't like war. I don't like all these things. Right. And that's going to reflect on your product. Were you limiting yourself in that way?
No. And I mean, we don't promote ourselves as a military brand. There's a lot of people who are out there, military. We are, you know, a luxury brand. We're ultra premium bourbon. I don't think that we encounter any borders or barriers, you know, political, social, whatever. You know, we say, hey, look, bourbon's for everyone. And this is just a great reflection of the opportunity in our country, people pursuing and achieving the American dream. So I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a peacock or a cockatoo, if you get out there and you just look at what it is and then you taste it and you appreciate high quality bourbon, then you're in, you know? If you're
the bourbon
this
comes
country,
first.
You can love
the
it.
The bourbon comes first, right?
Yeah, that's it.
The demographic that's going to really be your bourbon drinkers is also, you're doing pretty well there anyway. So I think that finding those people and doing that, I think you've done a great job of branding. Now, I personally have not tried it. I'm going to have to. I'm newer to the game than Mike is. I always go to him and say, what do you think about this one? What do you think about this one? Once in a while, I'll take a flyer on something and try it. But I will absolutely do that, and I'm excited about it.
That's good.
Is it tough to dial back in the civilian world? Because I wonder about that. As a former Green Beret, you're used to a certain... I've got a buddy who is ex Special Forces, and I've learned the hard way. I'll drive, Tom. I don't... Because when he's at the wheel, everything's 100 miles an hour.
Right.
And his pulse rate never gets above 5. And I'm just like, can we slow down, please? I got kids. And so, you know, I just know that's just his approach. And he doesn't feel it anymore, you know, because he spent enough time overseas. It just doesn't faze him. You've got a whole group of guys. You get together. It doesn't faze any of you. So you're like, yeah, no, let's punch it in the face. What was that like, that transition? Because you're going to be surrounded by a bunch of other people who are definitely not on your level.
Yeah. Well, first, for your buddy, I would say just ask him if he sees things that you don't see.
I don't want the answer.
You don't want the answer to that?
No, because I know he's going to tell me the truth.
For us, I think that we decided not to drink the water. So we are different. Embrace that. You know, that different, that was, you know, we were forged in fire in our careers in combat, and now we just said, we're going to take that same intensity. You know, what we had trained for all our lives was unconventional warfare, and that is, you know, that's
business.
Building an army, a resistance force, and a following. And so we just said, let's not, you know, we don't wear silk shirts and pointy shoes and skinny jeans. We are who we are. We are intense. We're learning how to dial that back in the right situation, but not all the time. But we go at everything we do 100%. And that's why we're where we are. You know, we are where... A distillery would be at 2 decades, and we're at 6 years, and we're still, I mean, just grinding it out. And we have huge distilleries and huge, you know, Ernest and Julio Gallo are just like, what are you guys made of? What are you doing? You know, the best out there are looking at us going, okay, you're an anomaly. What is it? And I think it's just, it's that drive being a Green Beret. That's something different. We're cut from a different cloth.
No. That's the failure is not an option thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we fail every day, but it's just that we're not afraid to get back up and keep hitting the wall.
I assure you, failure is an option. I am living proof. Now, Maddie, we have completely left you out of this to this point. You know, your role, as I understand it, is kind of herding the cats.
Basically.
Which sounds like, because we haven't even gotten to why you're in Montana yet, with the whiskey and war stories and all of the stops and kind of, you know, preaching the gospel. What's your day-to-day existence like with all of this?
One of the guerrilla marketing styles that we do that separates us from, you know, the other bourbons in the industry is that we have access to American heroes, right? So what we do is we set up events across the country, bottle signing events, whiskey war story events, kissing babies, shaking hands events, where we bring in, you know, the actual horse soldiers from ODA 595 and the brand, you know, the people that created this brand. And we get out and we add an extra value to our bottle by getting the bottle signed. You know, the only people that can sign our bottles are these guys. And, you know, someday they won't be signing bottles. So to try to get that, you know, get that extra excitement about the product, we get them out into market events, bottle signing events, whiskey war story events. We're doing a bottle signing today at Rocky Mountain Liquor. So a unique thing about our bottles that were designed by Elizabeth Pritchard, John Coco's wife. She came from the high-end perfume industry designing perfume bottles. Each one of our bottles has distinct features: broad shoulders to represent the weight of the weight of the country that the guys carried, you know, on that mission. It's got a challenge coin in the top of our barrel stave cork. All of our corks are made of barrel staves. All of our bottles are 100%, 99% authentic American made. Portuguese cork is the only thing that's not made in America. Our bottles are basically a mini monument in themselves. When it came time to get the bottles molded or to get the bottle molds made, the guys couldn't afford it was $55,000, I think, a bottle mold, and they needed 8 of them. So Scotty Neal, our president, he knew where we could get some steel that was readily available that could make those molds. And he got a hold of New York Port Authority, and New York Port Authority gave us steel I-beams from the World Trade Center.
Ooh,
and
wow.
We melted those steel I-beams down and made bottle molds out of them. So every one of our bottles, literally a ball of molten glass, they drop between 2 chunks of steel, blow air in the top of it, and our bottles come out. So if you take that bottle that's molded by 9/11 World Trade Center steel and put, you know, a horse soldier signature on the side of it, put it up in your bar, I mean, that's,
yeah,
it's a piece of American history.
And then slap the dog on anybody that tries to make a drink with it, because you better not uncork that.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, we try to convince people that, no, drink that whiskey and just fill it with iced tea later or something, you know. But, you know, so what I do as a regional brand specialist is I set up those events throughout my states. I think we have 6 regional brand specialists across the country. One of them, my battle buddy, Lassiter, he's also our military regional brand specialist. So he's actually getting us into the AFES market across the, you know, worldwide. We've gotten into Europe through the AFES chain, and we're currently working on getting into Asia market through the AFES chain. So, you know, now we're a worldwide bourbon.
Man, that's cool.
Yeah, with those things, I mean, you know, as a marketing guy and as taking something and trying to find the marketing aspects of it, this seems pretty easy. I mean, to be honest with you, first of all, quality product, we talked about that. And then second of all, to find these aspects of it, it's almost like there's too much information to really get somebody to understand everything about what you're looking at, right, when it's on a shelf, and especially when it's next to other products. So that's got to be, for you, a lot of fun to be involved with a product like that.
It is. It's the best... It is the best job that I've had. You know, it's the easiest. It's like one of the things the guys always say, this is the easiest job I've ever had. It's,
well,
surprising,
comparatively.
Right.
At least
right.
We're not getting shot at.
Yeah. But it's surprising how difficult it is, because of the style of marketing that we do. It's surprising how difficult it is to work with, you know, other
schmucks.
Other people in the industry, you know, like, you try to explain to them how, you know, this is what we're going to do. And they're like, no, what? You know, it's like, no, I'm telling you, like, this is how easy this is.
Right. Just, like, open your doors and shut
just
up.
Just put it
right
on the shelf, and it'll literally, you know, you'll see it walk out the door. Like, and they're, oh no. Oh, you know, they give you a slew of excuses, and you're like, no, trust me. Like, until they do until we can get in there to do a bottle signing or something, right, like that. And, you know, you get the right marketing and the right advertising and the right everything behind the bottle signing event. And I mean, we've done bottle signings where, I mean, I've watched 60 cases walk out the door in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, yeah, the owners come up and they're like,
what happened?
Holy smoke. I tell liquor store owners or managers all the time, I'm like, hey, I'm in the business of I told you so. We get done with this, right, and I'm going to tell you I told you so. They'll be like, oh, I don't want to bring in, you know, I'll say, just bring in 30 cases. Just bring in 10 cases of each bourbon. And I, you know, in 2 hours, we'll have it gone. And they're like, oh, well, you know, and they'll only bring in 15 cases. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. We'll come in, we'll do it, and you'll see how the monster, you know, works.
That's got to be a matter of your passion for this, and your identity being tied to it. And with all those things you just mentioned, and then you're running into somebody who doesn't have that same passion tied to, right, it, that same identity tied to it. And then you're running into a customer who does.
Yeah.
So the middle guy is going to be the one looking at both sides going, man, isn't for me, or it's, I underestimated it. Yep. But you see it. Like you said, I told you so.
Oh, and we've done events where it's a 2-hour event, and we've sold out all the bourbon they had in an hour, and they'll come up and they'll be like, yeah, you told me so. I'm like, right, I told you so. Like, yeah.
Now they're like,
okay, next time, you know, can we do this again? And I'm like, yeah, maybe in a year. Like, right, we're the fastest growing bourbon in the world. And we literally have, I mean, me as a regional brand specialist, now it's to the, you know, 2 years ago when I first came on board, I was begging stores to, you know, come, can, you know, just let me in, we'll try to do this. You know, now it's to the point where, you know, like I said, we're the fastest growing bourbon in the world. We're in 32 states, right, currently. We're turning down events. You
the
know,
girl that got hot after high school.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I've got, you know, we've got events calling us up. And they're like, hey, we got this coming on, you know, and now that we're with Gallo, who's even a bigger monster than, you know, than I even anticipated. They're like, hey, Maddie, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? And I'm like, okay, we'll do that one, but not these three, you know? And it's like, you know, and then the bigger that we're getting, you know, we're looking at bigger events. You know, one of the big events that we do here in Montana is the Big Sky PBR. And it's huge, you know, and it's, I mean, it's that top market, you know, that market that you want, that, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous that,
right,
you get up, that we get up there and,
yeah,
Big
draw
Sky,
the Venn diagram. There's lots, right, of points of intersection,
you know, and what we get there is we get that, we call it imprint marketing, where, you know, you get all these people from, you know, all around the country that come in and they get to experience Horse Soldier Bourbon at a, you know, a memorable event like the PBR, where they get to meet the horse soldiers, you know, they get to get pictures with them. We hear their stories, they hear our stories, because inevitably when you do one of these, you'll get an ex-Green Beret from Vietnam that comes in and they start, you know, talking smack back and forth. And then it's like, okay, that guy's, you know, now that guy is a brand ambassador, because he's going to take that experience back to, you know, New England or Texas or wherever he's from, and he's going to go into work and he's going to be telling the guys at the, you know, at the water fountain, hey man, this is what I did, you know, this weekend we went and did this and we ran into these guys and we drank their bourbon and it was amazing, and it, you know, we had a blast with them. And then that just resonates, you know, and it's that force multiplier. You know, you bring guys in for these Whiskey War Story events, you train them in the story, talk to them about the bourbon, let them taste the bourbon, and then send them out into the market to create more, you know, brand loyalists.
Yeah, this is an industry that lends itself to people who are loyal, people who like to show other people what they're into. Bourbons and beer, whatever it is, you know, those types of things. People love to wear the logo if they're tied to it. Mm-hmm. If they have it, you know, and that's what they're looking for. And you know, like I said, with bourbons, you're going to try some other ones, but there are going to be the ones you find yourself binded to that. And I think people love that part of it, especially when you give them a reason to do that. So this type of marketing goes a long ways. And you've got a customer base. Your demographic, the guy you're looking right at as one of your potential customers is going to do that for you.
We're personally connected to everybody in this country. You know, I mean, just hands down, there's nobody you can talk to right now, almost, who can't tell you something very personal about the 9/11 attack. And I mean, we're beyond that as a company now, but it's a great connection to everybody in this country. And then when they hear the story, they hear the brand, they hear the success of the brand, it makes them believe again, you know, I can do anything. You know, anything is possible if I just, you know, put my heart behind it, give it everything I have. I can do whatever I want in this country.
Boy, do we need more of that.
Yeah. We do. And I'm listening to thinking about these events, and I think Montana, I want to say we're fourth by percentage of veterans in terms of population. And per capita, I think
we're number one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Again, owing it to all of the people that I know, my sister, a couple of my best friends that are former military, and especially when amplified by a factor of Green Berets, that couldn't be a more insular outfit, right? What you guys are doing is only known and understood inside of that tiny unit. Now you switch to something that's public facing.
Yeah.
What is that like? Because you got to be pretty vulnerable at times if you're going to go around and share these intensely personal stories.
Yes. Big hurdle to overcome in the early days, because, you know, we internally, we are the quiet professionals. You never knew that you never knew what we were doing. We didn't talk about it. Anybody who advertises what they're doing is considered braggadocious, is going to probably end up outside of the special forces community, right? You know, so when we got out, you know, we would be doing events and say, this bourbon is made by the guys, and we would talk about the team as though they were other people, not us. And you know, I remember my wife on several occasions going, he's that guy. He's the guy he's telling you about it as though it's someone else, and it's him, and it's him, and it's him, and it's him. All these guys are the actual team. They're the guys who are making the bourbon. They're the guys who are building this. And so as we start getting advised on marketing and publicity, we realize it's like, man, we have to shed this shell, this persona of we can't say anything. And you know, my wife summed it up best. I love World War II veterans. You know, you see these guys with their hat covered in pens in the airport, and they're in a wheelchair, and I'm like, man, I could go sit on that guy's lap and just love him and ask him stories. And she's like, you have never come across one of these guys that wasn't gracious. He wasn't kind. He didn't answer your questions. And she goes, because he's mature enough to know that he's got a responsibility to the country to answer those questions and to be that guy. He's the spokesman for World War II. Now you're the spokesman for the world, the war on terror. And when these people come, you know, yeah, they're like adoring fans. And it's weird, you know, yeah, because you're wanting to be humble. You're wanting to be modest. And she goes, you have a responsibility to answer their questions and to smile at them and tell them who you are and be that guy. And I was like, done. You know, from that point forward, I got it. I don't brag about anything. You know, I didn't put myself in that situation. Right. And if given the option, I probably would have walked away, you know. But we worked together as a team. We trained together as a team. We were ready for that. Not for the horses necessarily, but we were ready for the conflict, and we did it. We're not bragging. We just did our jobs that day.
Now, parts of what you said would resonate with anybody who's close to anybody who's a veteran, and especially in these recent conflicts. And when you were talking about that, I have a friend of mine who's 26-year military, retired. He was a medic, and he doesn't say anything. You know, he doesn't tell stories. He doesn't talk. I don't even know how many tours he did. I don't know details about what he's done. And we're really close friends, very, yeah, very close friends. But recently he started sending me a couple of pictures from him being over there. And my thought was, there's something wrong. And so I reached out. I'm like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, and I was right. He was in a mind frame that was kind of he's going through a little bit of some tough stuff outside, yeah, of that. But you got to run into that with veterans who talk to you at these events, not just the civilians, the veterans who come up. And you've probably run into this situations where they just need to talk to somebody.
Sure.
And I'm sure that you recognize that at these events and have to do something a little bit different with those folks. It's really important stuff right now, as we know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, learning to talk normalizes those things that were very abnormal in your brain. You know, your brain processes something in daily life. It normalizes it and then stores it in memory. If you have a crazy traumatic event, it passes that normalization and just gets stuck away quickly into your memory, but you've never processed it through. So for us, it's good to talk. For all veterans, you know, it's good to talk. Sometimes you think, there's absolutely nothing wrong with me. I don't have any problems. But, you know, maybe you react to certain things oddly. It's good to talk. It's good to ask them questions, you know, talk things through with guys. We run into people all the time where you're like, oh, brother, you know, when this is done, me and you, we're going to go. We're going to sit down. We're going to have a drink or a cocktail and talk. And there's been lots of guys that you recognize it. And there's so many resources out there. So I keep a pocket full of resources where when I run into guys, I'm like, hey, man, if I referred you to somebody and they, you know, picked up the bill and gave you some help and, you know, got you back in the gym and talking and doing stuff, would you do it? 99% of the time, they're like, man, you saved my life, bro. You know, so we always keep our eyes open for guys like that.
Well, and that's an incredibly heavy responsibility because you're a part of I keep thinking of this conflict that I have in my head, trying to imagine this very small combat unit compared to now you're opening up the doors in the civilian operation to everybody, you know, and at least in my experience, I'm always happier with the people that wear the crazy on the sleeves. It's the quiet ones that worry me. I'm like, that dude hasn't moved in like 25 minutes. So that responsibility is something that, like it or not, it's yours.
Yeah.
As the front-facing part of this thing with the amazing story that you have,
sure,
to tell.
Like the story or anything else. We have a responsibility.
How many guys make these travels with you? How many of you are there out there on the road?
There's, you know, five of us primarily, and then two of the CIA guys jump in from time to time.
Any surprises from them that you've learned? Because the CIA guys always seem to have something that you didn't know they knew.
Yeah, we did a reunion 2 years ago, and the team leader from the CIA is a great partner with the brand, and just we love the guy. We all do. And he did the keynote speaker for the reunion event that we had. It was a big event. 400 or 500 people there. And he told the whole story that we'd been telling for years now, building this bourbon brand, Horse Soldier Bourbon. He told the whole story from the CIA perspective. And we were just like, what? What? You know, that you were doing that, you know, while we were doing it. Was so cool. Just so totally awesome.
Now, where's this taking you guys? Maddie talked about being in, you know, the PBR. You're sitting here in Helena, Montana, doing a podcast. You've seen a little bit of Western Montana here. What other events, people, and places is it taking you that you didn't see a bourbon company like probably ending up being part of?
I mean, everywhere from a tiny little speakeasy talking to, you know, 10 people, very intimate, quiet, to AT&T Stadium in Fort Worth with 5,000 people, you know, everything in between. We've got this challenge to live legendary. You see it on our bottles. And the first Live Legendary tour was this yacht race from Southern Key West to...
Didn't they go to Cuba?
Cuba, yeah. So a yacht race from Key West to Cuba. First time we'd ever been on a yacht. We took second place and we were just pissed. We were like, man, we're so close. And people are like, we've been training for this for 30 years. So we did it the next year and set the world record for the fastest time it was ever done. And then 2 minutes and 40 seconds later, the world record was broken. So we said, okay, we've done what we came here. Couple years back, everybody went and got dive qualified. We became archaeological divers, and we went back to the Gulf of Saipan. And this is where a lot of the Doolittle Raiders, if you remember the Air Force Special Operations Assault suicide mission after the attack of Pearl Harbor, these guys agreed to do this mission that we have the fuel to get in and bomb Japan, but we know we're not getting out. And these guys trained and trained, and this was like spec ops of the Air Force, big time. They went in, and then these guys crash landed in the Gulf of Saipan. Some of them made it back to mainland China, but a lot of these guys crash landed. A lot of these guys were lost and declared buried at sea. We went back to the Gulf of Saipan with Task Force Dagger organization, found these aircraft, went down and exhumed, if that's the right word, artifacts from those aircraft. There's no human remains left after 80 years on the bottom of the ocean. But for the Doolittle Raiders 80th anniversary, these guys had had a reunion for 80 years until the last two guys died. And just very quietly, discreetly, we presented those artifacts back to those families 80 years later.
Ooh.
What closure, you know, what a huge treasure for these guys.
What was that like?
It was crazy.
That's gotta be intense.
Was tearful. It was, you know, it was magnificent, man. It was one of those things that you're like, nothing can touch this. The power that came from doing that. We're going in June now. Like Maddie just went to airborne school. This guy's jumping out of airplanes now, parachuting, military
style.
You can just do that.
You don't have to enlist or anything.
You gotta know people. You gotta know Horse Soldier Bourbon, right?
I can't just show up at the gate like, Will said it was cool.
When's it my turn? Like, hey.
No, we went down to Florida. There's this club down there called Round Canopy Parachute Team, and they train people how to do military jumps. And so now, June 6th, June 5th, we're going and we're jumping into Normandy, France, out of the original aircraft on the 80th anniversary C-47s. Of the D-Day invasion.
No way.
We have 10 C-47s going.
That was my sister was in the Army, and she went to Normandy. And I actually lived across the street from this lovely married couple, and I'm, you know, my family on my mom's side is Canadian, so I grew up with a healthy dislike for the French, and the difference between a French person and somebody from Normandy, the lady lived across it in Normandy, when my sister went, she said it's like not a day has passed. They come out, they find out your military,
100%.
They come out with gratitude and all of it. But man, dropping in there out of
The same aircraft that dropped these guys in 80 years ago. It's unbelievable. So the whole team's going down. We're taking some a few friends with us. We're staying in a castle for like 10 days. We're doing jumps and trips all over Europe. And jumping in on the exact same drop zone.
We'll do a cross channel jump where we fly from London into France, and we're jumping into France.
And you get to go too? And doing the whole thing?
Doing the whole thing.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Reminisce Angus Beef, the absolute best beef in the state of Montana, being made at a ranch down in Dillon by Brian Massard. They formulate all of their cows for taste. They've been doing this for decades down there, and they make the best steaks, burgers, snack sticks, and other beef treats that you can imagine.
The best thing is you can get them anywhere, so you can get beef boxes. You can pick out the cuts you want. You can get those specialty meats, which include jerky and summer sausage. Yeah, the best jerky you'll ever have, by the way. All of the beef is bred for taste, and you can tell it every single time you have Reminisce Angus beef. So pick out the beef you want and have it right at your door. It's easy to find. Just go to remangusbeef.com and get the best beef in Montana. And the ranch is located near Dillon, and it's a great Montana ranch. The best beef you'll have. RemAngusBeef.com.
It's the live legendary lifestyle.
We also have the wrong resume.
Right, and the wrong logos. All those things are... I met a guy. I used to go hunting not far from here, actually, on the Rocky Mountain front. There was a landowner up there, and I talked to this guy, a really nice old guy. Could barely hear anything, hard of hearing. And after I talked to him a couple of times, I mentioned his name to somebody, and they were like, "Did you know he was a veteran who was on a glider at Normandy?" I'm like, "What? This I old know. Guy?" And I asked him about that, and he just, basically brushed it off. And I didn't even know that happened at the time. And he's like, "Yeah, that's something we did." And it just makes you look at somebody in a whole different way when finds out stuff like that. So
I don't know how you run a glider with your balls dragging on the ground like that.
Oh, man. Gives you something to land on.
Oh, unbelievable human being. Those guys, and I think he's passed by now, but those are the guys you talk about when you see a veteran in an airport wearing the hat and the wheelchair. That's the type of stories that they might have.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, speaking of the parachute thing, I think I saw a video of you guys actually dropping in whiskey casks.
Oh, that is true,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
We'll do it again. We're jumping a bunch of bourbon in again this year.
That's awesome. Who are we delivering that to when that happens? Who's that going to?
Cool people like you, I guess.
I was going to say.
I think we're probably going to drink most of it when we're there, to be honest with you.
We did, when we were down there and everybody's doing their jump training and refreshers, Will had to do his jump master refresher, stuff like that. We took two Horse Soldier bourbon barrels and we packed them full of our 80th anniversary 100 or 80 proof Horse Soldier bourbon bottles, and we airdropped them out of two C-47s.
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah.
You saw that? Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the video. Wasn't it? You get to see the video from when they're pushing it. No worries that, man, if this thing hits at the wrong velocity, it's going to, with the wrong velo, you're going to make a mess.
Smell great out there for a while.
And what, tell me another bourbon company that airdrops bourbon.
Just like he wants to jump out of the airplane, there's some air camps or elk camps that will listen to this and go, "Wait a second, we can have bourbon dropped in here?"
Right?
That would be wonderful. Yeah.
No, I've jumped out of an airplane before. I don't need to do that again, but if you want to drop the bourbon at my place,
right?
I'm just south of town, 15 miles.
I sent that clip to some buddies of mine that are prior military and big bourbon fans, and every one of them sent me their grid coordinates where they were. they're like, next drop, bring it in.
You got Onyx, here's a pin.
Right.
What else is in the works, man? I gotta believe you guys have got some plans, stuff you haven't done yet.
Yeah, we don't have the live legendaries kind of come as they show up when the good idea fairy drops them off. I guess our big plan right now, we're working towards July 4, 2026 is the biggest horizon for us. That's when our own final gigantic distillery opens up in Somerset, Kentucky.
Really?
So that's going to be Horse Soldier Farms, 260 acres in South Kentucky.
Are people going to be able to do the tours?
Oh, yeah. Not only did we get incorporated into the Bourbon Trail, but the governor said Horse Soldier Farms is going to be the gateway to the Bourbon Trail.
Nice!
Because we're kind of set off from everybody else. We're due south of Lexington. And this place is going to be, it's going to be fantastic. So starting out with the distillery, building, I think, 20, 25,000 barrel rick houses. We're going to have like a wedding chapel, concert venues. We're building a huge stable so that from that point forward, when like our military horses retire, right now they go to a sale barn. From that point forward, they'll be able to come out to Horse Soldier Farms and their days with us out there. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
Very cool.
And with that ability, you guys with bourbon, you're gonna end up with some aged, you're gonna have the ability to probably store and keep some of this stuff in special editions down the road as you know, you reach those points where you reach the benchmarks of having aged bourbon.
Right. We're doing it now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we just opened up 300 barrels for our barrel pick program that we've been aging for a while, so they'll be the first available Horse Soldier Bourbon barrel pick program.
600 years old.
With the distillery, though, I know that was the surprising part for me when I did the tour was, you know, there were so many places, Maker's Mark comes to mind. You're dead ass, you're lost. Like, there's no way, like, we are on this one lane concrete road through horse country. We are on the wrong road. And definitely in somebody's scope right now. There's right? We are being tracked with our out-of-state plates looking
the
like dummies.
They're watching us.
100%.
I hear banjos.
There's a brown jug band not far from here. And then you get there, and it's some of the most beautiful country you can imagine.
Sure.
You know, with all that. And to get to be a part of that and have the room for the horses and all of the, you know, the venue stuff, that's got to be...
It's going to be awesome.
Got to be amazing.
And we're not too far. Like, a lot of them are seriously remote. We are tucked just outside of Somerset. And so they're super excited to have us. We're happy to be there. We just opened up one of our restaurants in Somerset, the Urban Still House. So I feel like I'm pitching a commercial right now. But it's just cool stuff. You know, sure. It's what we're doing. And, you know, we're happy about it. We're passionate about it.
Right on Lake Cumberland. Houseboat capital of the world.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
No. And you want to be early on that tour because some people might not make it to the end of the tour. So
you make the bourbon tour.
Right.
You want to make sure you stop there first.
Yeah. Make that your first stop, not your last.
Just stumbling off. We had a couple of, they're always from Ohio. They are, by the way. I mean, I like to goof on people from Ohio, but those people are a mess. How's the experience been in Montana?
Great. Excellent. I love the weather. It's rained on us. It's been really cool since we've been here.
You get a different season every day this time of year. In the spring. We don't know. Like, my dogs are super confused. It's 70 one day, and there's 3 inches of snow the next morning.
Yeah,
I give up.
Right. Yeah, it's beautiful, man. Montana, you can't go wrong. It reminds me a lot, other than the mountains of Texas, you know, because just to drive down the street to get gas, you got to go 2.5 hours to get there. So I like the remoteness of it. I like how just huge Montana is. It's beautiful here. The people are great. Super patriotic. I didn't realize you're the highest veteran per capita state.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
And you got to see different parts because Butte and Missoula are wildly different. As far as the people, those are two different. If you're talking to people from Montana who talk about, you know, all the towns making fun of each other, Butte and Missoula are on the they're a little bit different. But once you get in there and meet people, it's kind of the same. Like, it's not hard to us to see that Montana's Montana.
Yeah.
Well, and with the military vibe, I mean, the base here just outside of town where they do a fair bit of that training. I've been on a Chinook and got to go through the canyon. Once they get over the base, they get to drop below the deck, and all of a sudden you're just looking up at hills from a helicopter, which I'm sure for you is, for me was different. And out that same way, when I very first got here, I was out with my dogs on a hiking trail, and to, you know, the airborne thing. I see the helicopter go over. I'm like, oh, wow, that's really the helicopter of parachutes. Oh.
People.
Am I supposed to be here? Like, did somebody hit a button or something?
Oh,
I was,
no.
I was all alone. It was 20 below. I was like, those guys are really going to end up close. Because there's a little network of trails that runs right back there, right next to the base.
Yeah.
So they're doing all that stuff that, again, to your eyes, I'm sure is nothing to
make
me.
It fun. I would just wait for them to land and then just take off running. Just right?
start screaming at them in some gibberish foreign language.
We're out of here.
No, I don't want to get shot. Because the only other time I've seen that, actually, I was in Seattle and they were doing, what do they call it? Skyfair, whatever the big air show is. And I was working for ESPN at the time. We were sidelined at the headquarters for the Seahawks during training camp. And this helicopter comes in blowing all this water off of Lake Washington. Unbeknownst to all of us, guys jumped out. Helicopter takes off. 10 minutes later, these guys go bloop, bloop, like the commercial. They come out of the water like, oh, God. But and then they just wanted to meet the football team. Football team was freaked out. They ran over to meet these guys.
How cool.
It was pretty rad once I figured out that it wasn't it.
Cool. So yeah. I'm
calling my wife like, bye.
Let's roll,
I saw
baby.
Red Dawn. This isn't good.
We actually, here in our part of Montana, we actually do get a lot of special operations teams that come in and do a bunch of training.
Right.
Helena, being the birthplace of Special Forces, is with the Devil's Brigade. Yeah. It's a big attraction. I know there's a couple of retired SF guys that have some training facilities between here and Townsend, and they'll get in special ops teams that come in and, you know, do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I spend enough time in the backcountry to always worry about bumping into them because I don't want to. Like, yeah, whatever they're doing, I'm not supposed to be a part of it.
I don't know if you ever heard, but one time there was a SEAL team that was training in Butte, and one of the SEALs went out the door and lost control of his chute and landed right in the middle of Harrison Avenue.
Oh. And again, that's, he's looking at military stuff. People in Butte would be like, you lost,
then got in a fist fight because, well, Butte.
Yeah, because it's Butte. Because
they punch people hello in that town.
Yep.
Well, wow. It's true.
It is true.
They take great pride in it. They punch each other at weddings.
Especially on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's one.
Yeah.
We got to get that. How do we get that on the Horse Soldier calendar?
What's that?
That's one of the biggest St. Patrick's Day parties in the nation.
Oh, yeah. Invite us. That's all we're waiting for.
Yeah. Yep. Butte, they kind of throw open the gates, don't they?
Yep.
You could probably pick your spot, I'd imagine.
Let's do it.
Well, Will, Maddie, thank you so much for taking the time. I know that they keep you guys busy. When I saw that you were going to be around and in Montana, I'm a huge fan of the bourbon and knew a little bit about the backstory. It's way cooler now because it sounds better when you say it than when I try to tell people. I'm like, and then they were on horses. guys like, whatever. Is the bourbon good? Keep pouring my drink. Shut up. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
A lot of fun.
All right. That's it for us, man. We are done for the week. Thank you. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you found it. And we will be back next week.